Early in 1851, during the frenzy of the California Gold Rush, an armed group of white men was scouring the western slopes of the Sierra Nevada. They called themselves the Mariposa Battalion, and they were searching for Indians, intent on driving the natives from their homelands and onto reservations. Late on the afternoon of March 27th, the battalion came to a narrow valley surrounded by towering granite cliffs, where a series of waterfalls dropped thousands of feet to reach the Merced River on the valley's floor. One of the men, a young doctor named Lafayette Bonnell, found himself transfixed by the vista. "As I looked, a peculiar exalted sensation seemed to fill my whole being," he wrote, "and I found my eyes in tears with emotion. I said with some enthusiasm, 'I have here seen the power and glory of a supreme being. The majesty of his handiwork is in that testimony of the rocks.'" Bonnell's enchantment with the scenery was not shared by the rest of the Mariposa Battalion. Its commander, a hardened Indian fighter named James D. Savage, was angered that the natives had somehow disappeared into the mountains. He ordered his men to set fire to the Indians' homes and their storehouses of acorns in order to starve them into submission. But before the battalion moved on, Bonnell convinced the others that, as the first white man ever to enter the valley, they should give it a name. He suggested Yosemite, based on Savage's information that this was the name of the tribe they had come to dispossess. Long after the tribe was finally located and forced from their beloved valley, scholars would learn that in fact the natives called the valley Awani, meaning the place of a gaping mouth, and that they called themselves the Awanichis, in honor of the valley they had considered their home for centuries. Yosemite, it was learned, meant something entirely different. In the native language, Yosemite refers to people who should be feared. It means they are killers.
"Descending towards the Yosemite Valley, we came upon a high point clear of trees, from whence we had our first view of the singular and romantic valley, and as the scene opened in full view before us, we were almost speechless with wondering admiration at its wild and sublime grandeur." James Mason Hutchings.
In 1855, a second group of white people arrived in Yosemite Valley, this time as tourists, not Indian fighters. They were led by James Mason Hutchings, an energetic Englishman who had failed miserably as a prospector during the gold rush and decided instead to seek his fortune as a publisher. His broadsheet, The Miner's Ten Commandments, had already sold 100,000 copies. Now he planned on expanding his business by promoting California's scenic wonders through an illustrated magazine. When a report about the Indian campaign in the Sierras briefly mentioned a waterfall nearly 1,000 feet high, 6 times the height of Niagara's, Hutchings determined to see it for himself. The first difficulty was simply finding the valley Bonnell had described with such rapture. At the nearby town of Mariposa, few residents had ever heard of Yosemite. Even veterans of Savage's battalion were no longer sure how to get there. After securing 2 Indian guides and enduring 3 days of rough going through thick underbrush and dense forests, Hutchings and his group finally emerged at what is now called Inspiration Point. "It is beyond the power of language to describe the awe-inspiring majesty of the darkly frowning and overhanging mountain walls of solid granite that here hem us in on every side," Hutchings wrote once they had entered the valley itself. Farther on, they came upon Yosemite Falls, the highest waterfall on the continent. Although this stream shoots over the margin of the mountain, it falls almost in a body, not in a continuous stream exactly, but having a close resemblance to an avalanche of snowy rockets that appear to be perpetually trying to overtake each other in their descent, and mingle the one into the other, the whole composing a torrent of indescribable power and beauty. Huge boulders and large masses of sharp, angular rocks are scattered here and there, forming the uneven sides of an immense and apparently ever-boiling cauldron. If man ever feels his utter insignificance at any time, it is when looking upon such a scene of appalling grandeur. In his zeal to put his own stamp on the valley, Hutchings decided that one waterfall, which Bunnell had said the Indians called Pohono, needed a different name, something more likely to draw tourists. Since it looked to Hutchings like a bride's veil caught by a breeze, he dubbed it Bridal Veil Falls, by far the most musical and suitable of any of all others yet given. To make the most of the visit for his publishing business, Hutchings had brought along Thomas A. Ayres, an aspiring young artist, hired to draw pictures of everything he saw, which Hutchings would sell as lithographs and use to illustrate his new magazine. They would be the first artistic representations of Yosemite ever to reach the public. 4 years later, in 1859, Hutchings made his second visit to the valley, this time with Charles L. Weed, a practitioner of the young art of photography. Weed's photographs were soon on display in San Francisco and copied as engravings in Hutchings' magazine, meant to feed the growing public appetite for more descriptions and views of a place Hutchings predicted will serve to immortalize the natural features of California and draw from all parts of the world admiring tourists to visit them.